Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. We figure the weekend is a good time for that. Time to lean back a little, slow down, meet somebody interesting, hear what people are saying. Of course, when we're not on the radio, you can catch up with us on Facebook. Just search Indiana Weekend. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about the show, your comments, thoughts about whom we might talk with, or where you would like to hear our microphones. Our email address is, conveniently enough, indianaweekend@gmail.com. I'm John Strauss. Indiana's a long way from out of the woods when it comes to economic recovery, but a good argument can be made that some of the hardest hit parts of the state have turned the corner. Today, a tale of two cities, Anderson and Muncie, where factories closed and jobs fled, where hope seemed to find no home. But lately, the discussion, never far from the topic of jobs and economic development, is also about the optimistic sense of what's possible. We start in Anderson, which lost 24 General Motors factories, more than 20,000 jobs years ago. The factories stood like hulking ghosts looming over a shrinking city, where the joke you often heard went like this: "Will the last person out of Anderson please turn out the lights?" Now look at what's changed. Nestle built a $500 million factory. The flagship Enterprise Center, a business park at Exit 22, helping create over 1,000 jobs. A massive new wind turbine farm taking shape in the region. Anderson University is building a new music center. And Hoosier Park, the racetrack and casino, credited with hundreds of tourism jobs. This is a long way from the good old days, but even 3 years ago, the New York Times sent a reporter here who wrote about Anderson finally starting to get past its GM hangover. We wanted to see what folks in Anderson are talking about these days, and to do that, we started with a local real estate agent and a civic volunteer who seems to show up everywhere. Meet Roger Shute, Anderson optimist. He remembers the city's mood years ago as the factories closed.
It was very difficult. The morale was very low. You know, the favorite phrase was, "the last person out, turn off the lights." A lot of us didn't believe that because a lot of us, we just thought differently than that. But it was very difficult, and it's still very difficult. I mean, that was a huge legacy for this community and that took decades to build and will take decades to get over. It set a mentality for the community. And so we're struggling to change who we are. You know, we're becoming more small manufacturing, more small business kinds of things. No one was happy. There was very little to be excited about in Anderson, Indiana at that point. And we've come light years from that.
Was Anderson hit harder than other places in Indiana?
Absolutely. And I don't know if this is an accurate quote, but it's close. We may have been the second largest General Motors town in America outside of Detroit. It was a huge, huge deal. And of course, Muncie, you know, who's kind of a sister community, you know, had a lot of GM plants also. So, I mean, the region really, really took it very tough.
Indiana at one point was a national leader in repossessions.
It absolutely was. We still have another 5 years. We're not certainly not a leader now. We're probably maybe 9th or 10th. But we have another 5 years of bank repos coming our direction just because the whole banking industry was just a mess. I mean, and because of some of the investments my wife and I had, we began to see that firsthand. People who were buying homes from us that we own, paying ridiculous prices in the middle 90s, ridiculous prices, and we couldn't understand it. And we were living in the very beginning of that tsunami where they would loan money to anybody who was breathing. It made no business sense, and consequently, you know, the country is certainly paying for it.
How's that affected Anderson?
Well, it's been a double whammy for Anderson because Anderson was already reeling from the loss of the General Motors paychecks and the ancillary jobs that came from all those General Motors jobs, and then to have people getting mortgages that were maybe double the value of a home, and so you already had a neighborhood that was struggling because incomes had dropped so much, and now all of a sudden you've got people who are buying homes and they end up losing them. I mean, it really was a double whammy for us.
Roger Shute thinks people in Anderson, still cautious, are more hopeful now.
Their jobs are going fairly well. Their neighborhoods are doing pretty okay. I think more and more people are getting a sense of optimism. We see more and more people buying homes that are not bank repos. We know that a lot of these folks work out of town now. You know, in some respects, we're a bedroom community for Muncie, Ball State, but certainly for Indianapolis and the Fishers area. But I think it appears to me people are starting to invest in the community again. People are starting to spend money here. People are beginning to recognize the good things that Anderson has to offer. The Paramount, the Fine Arts Center, you know, a couple of really downtown jewels that we have. You know, some people are drawn to Hoosier Park, which has been a great community partner. And then you've got the growth of Ivy Tech, you've got the stability of Anderson University, and those organizations as they continue to reach out to the community.
Besides its economic base, Anderson has had to rebuild its civic leadership.
When GM left, many of the white-collar jobs left with GM. For a while, those were the community leaders. Now the community leaders now come out of the hospital sector, the educational sector, the small businesses, and when I say small, I'm talking not terribly small businesses, but like Rickers, for example, you know, is a good example of a locally owned business that's fairly large, pretty successful, and they give back in many, many ways. So, you know, what kind of a blueprint do you look for? You have to engage your community leaders. That's one of the things the Leadership Academy does, is it engages a new class of community leaders, because these are the people who work on, or who will volunteer time for nonprofit boards and for for-profit boards, and they'll get out and do the things that make a community grow.
Roger Shute, one of Anderson's best-known civic volunteers on the city's climb back from the loss of thousands of GM jobs.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Here's John Strauss.
Think of this as sort of a Hoosier Hometowns edition of Indiana Weekend, looking specifically at Anderson and Muncie. We wanted to talk about Anderson and how that city is pulling out of the recession. Scott Underwood is editor of the Anderson Herald Bulletin, and we talked with him by phone. And he talked about the sort of overarching challenges facing the city.
Yeah, I think, John, that a big problem the community's had is sort of this psychosis that there aren't good things going on in the city and that the city does not have a bright future. An example of that is when I came, I'd worked here in the mid-80s through the mid-90s in the sports department. I came back here as the editor in early 2007, and that year, the State Chamber of Commerce awarded Anderson its Community of the Year award, and that had a lot to do with the attraction of Nestle to the Flagship Center area. And it's a good award. It means that good things happen in the community, and I remember being sort of shocked by the response that a lot of Anderson residents had. You know, they sort of rolled their eyes and said, gosh, there must not be a lot good going on in Indiana if Anderson gets the Community of the Year award. And so there's been sort of this haze, I think, of negativism. Now, I detect during my five years here that nothing to do with me, but I think that is improving somewhat. The haze is beginning to lift, and that people are not so much always looking back to the heyday of the auto industry here, but now they're kind of seeing a few things happening now, and they're realizing that what the community really needs is a diversified economic development portfolio that involves lots and lots of different industries, and that, you know, we're probably not going to get a lot of new industries that are going to have, you know, 5,000, 2,500 jobs, and like we had back in the day of the auto industry when there were more than 25,000 people working here in Anderson in the auto industry. So sort of the little victories that you see at the Flagship Center, where there's a variety of different levels of jobs. There are some engineering jobs. There are lots of call center jobs. There are jobs out at Nestle. That combination of things that you see out there and some other small victories, I think, is sort of dispelling the haze a little bit. people are beginning to look to the future a little bit more and recognize that the future isn't the same as what the past was. We're not apt to have huge auto industry plants, or huge plants aren't going to be the way the community is going to make its mark and become economically more stable. A combination of the smaller businesses, some medium-sized ones, and maybe you get a big hit here or there.
Scott Underwood, the Anderson Herald Bulletin editor, said you can also get a sense of the community's mood just by driving around.
Driving around the city this spring, just when I'm out going to lunch or going to a meeting someplace, there's just more bustle in the community than there was during the recession. There are more cars out, more people on the sidewalks. You get the impression that there are more people stopping in at the few downtown businesses we have. There's just more of an energy in the community than there has been. And I think that's indicative of sort of a little bit of a shift in attitude. The fact that there have been a few small victories in terms of job attraction, that there's some good things going on at Anderson University and with Ivy Tech and general in education and the community at large, and by large I mean all of Madison County. But it just sort of this sense that I have, and I've mentioned it to some other people too, and they have the same sense as well, that there's just a bit more of an energy to the community now.
The New York Times had a story 3 years ago saying that Anderson was getting over its GM hangover, what they called it.
I think that Anderson its recovery from that hangover was stalled certainly by the recession. Unemployment went back up. There's still a lot of underemployment in the community. And so the recovery certainly was hindered by the recession. Now that the economy is looking a little bit brighter, and things are starting to look up a little bit in education. As I said before, that sort of haze of negativism is beginning to lift.
Scott Underwood, editor of the Anderson Herald Bulletin, on how his city, which lost more than 20,000 jobs when General Motors closed its factories there, is getting along these days. Do you have a story about recovering from the Great Recession? We'd like to hear it. Send us an email or maybe a digital recording of your story to indianaweekend@gmail.com.
You're listening to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.
Hi, this is John Strauss with this question. Think we'll ever see the 55-mile-per-hour speed limit again? You've seen the news coverage about gasoline prices. First they're up, and you have all these anxious reporters wringing their hands. Then they're down. Down is good, except it's a sign the economy isn't doing so well. Decreased demand and all of that. Gas prices usually go up in the summer, but at least you can still buy it. After the oil embargo in the 1970s, there were long lines and shortages. Congress passed the national 55-mile-per-hour speed limit. Now they're finding so much domestic oil and gas that USA Today says we may be nearing energy independence. Could be, but that's still years away. In the meantime, you can bet that if gas prices go down some, they'll head back up. Birds gotta sing, fish gotta swim. We're gonna pay more eventually. But there is something you can do. Slow down. Edmunds, the experts in cars and technology, say you can cut your gasoline use by 37% by driving gently, avoiding fast starts, driving at or below the speed limit. AAA says that for every 5 miles you drive over the speed of 65, you decrease your gas mileage by 10%. A few years ago, when gasoline hit $4 a gallon, a guy in California began advocating a return to the 55-mile-per-hour limit. Some people said that 55 might be too slow. A newspaper reporter in California tried driving 55 on his interstate for a while. There were some dirty looks, the predictable obscene gesture. In 2008, Rasmussen Reports conducted a national survey of attitudes about the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. Who do you think favored it the most? 50% of seniors said they would like to see the lower speed limit. Among people under 30, the survey showed only 24% liked it. What about you? What's a good compromise to save fuel? I try to do around 60, 65 if I'm not blocking anybody. Then my car gets like 39 miles per gallon. Do you ever do that? You know, we're not the only ones out there. You can see trucks sometimes or other cars. I like it when we have a little caravan. I don't mind being a slowpoke. We could even make this a movement. We'll save fuel, help us reach the day when America is energy independent. We'll call ourselves maybe the Legion of Slowpoke Travelers, L-O-S-T. People will see us poking along at 60 miles per hour, and they'll say, why, they must be lost. Volunteers in Muncie are trying to revive the city's downtown. There's a major planning effort underway, public meetings, a consultant, and some high hopes for luring more businesses and residents. So we went to the corner of Walnut Street and Adams, arguably one of the busiest sections of Muncie's downtown, where we met Brandon Mundell, owner of Toys Forever Models and Hobbies. I asked him how business was going.
We've been downtown, we're working on our fifth year now. Been very pleased. The economy and things have been up and down, but right now things are going pretty well for us.
When we look around downtown and you compare Muncie's downtown with other cities around Indiana that maybe you've been to, I don't know if you've been to Lafayette or South Bend or Fort Wayne, talk about Muncie's downtown and what you see.
I see a downtown redevelopment still in its infancy, although it's been 15 years since we did the facade restoration program and redid the streetscape and things like that. I still think we have a ways to go. I look at, most recently I've been down in, Broad Ripple and Indianapolis and Noblesville and those places, and they have kind of a good thriving, kind of redevelopment going on there, or development as it is. And we're getting there here downtown. Probably where we're at right now is we have a lot of good anchors, I want to put it that way. We have lots of good destination retailers, Toys Forever like myself, or the Artist Within, the Pottery Painting Studio, and then our restaurants, the Herat and Vermeys, they're very good anchors, and people come down to come to those specific places. And that's really wonderful, but they don't then say, okay, I came to the hobby shop, I'm going to try out Artist Within also, and kind of do that. We'll hop from place to place, or we'll eat lunch and then go to a couple places. That kind of synergy isn't happening. So we're missing, in my opinion, a critical mass of retail establishments that just keep making, want to make people stay. Now I'll speak, the consultants that were here with our downtown planning process over the last few weeks, they talk about how residential is also a key of that. We do have a lot of apartments that are full downtown or near downtown, and those are going pretty well. But we also have neighborhoods that are near downtown that could use a little help, and to me are the key to making this downtown running a little bit in terms of residential. Emily Kimbrough neighborhood, the North Central, Old West End, Gilbert, those are right, they're within walking distance of downtown, and they've got lots of housing that's fairly affordable, but there's a little blight there, so someone has to take the dive of saying, yep, I believe in this, I'm gonna buy a house here. My neighbors may not be the prettiest in the world, but we'll get it there. I'll invite all my friends to start living here, and we'll get there. So,
how's Muncie changed, would you say, in the past 20 years? Because you grew up here. You're from Muncie.
Yeah, I am from here. Your average person will say the manufacturing changed, and that's true. I mean, we lost big things like ABB and the Chevrolet plant, which is now torn down, and Indiana Steel and Wire. And
what's your role in the downtown planning process?
I was invited by Bruce Baldwin and the Redevelopment Commission to be on the steering committee. And that's a group of, I think it's about a dozen, I'd have to look at the exact roster, but about a dozen key players in downtown that are kind of help guide the process, although it really is a public-fed process. So, it requires public feedback. So we had the charrette a few weeks ago where people came and gave their input about what they think the downtown needs to be like. That'll be what really drives the force there, but then the steering committee kind of gets and works the nuts and bolts a little bit, and then when it all comes to the end, it'll probably fall on us to really champion the tasks that come out of this report that's going to be done. One of the things that we think will probably happen is they'll recommend that we at least get a two-way Walnut Street. So one or two or a bunch of us will have to get into saying, okay, who do we need to talk to at the city and Board of Works and this and that, and pull this together to make Walnut become a two-way. That's where I see my role. A little bit of guidance right now, but really maybe long-term implementers, the better role.
What's come out so far in terms of the people with suggestions or ideas?
Nothing official yet, so that's kind of interesting, but just kind of feelings that I got as we were going through the thing. A lot of people are really happy about the Walnut Corridor. That really is the core of the downtown. I mean, when we were looking at the downtown, we were looking at basically geographically from Liberty Street to Madison Street, and then from Weiser on the north down to the roundabout / railroad tracks area. So it's a fairly large geographic area, whereas I think most people's perception of downtown really is the Walnut Core when they think of downtown Muncie, and that's because that's really kind of our most active part. One of the things we saw from the consultants' reports, they did a little bit of basic analysis, and then what we all know as well is that our Walnut Quarter is nice, but again, going to that lack of critical mass, we've got a lot of empty spaces on Walnut. And we've got a lot of single-type businesses, you know, a lot of restaurants, bars, and things like that, and you know, there's not as much variety. And so I think the consultants termed it in one of our meetings that we need to do some Walnut Street Corridor CPR. You know, we really need to kind of quickly hit some things and get it full and get it thriving before we look at some big picture things like big infill buildings and things like that, which are things we probably want to do longer term. Or like a, you know, one of the things that probably came in the conversations was river access or a river promenade or whatever you might want to call it, you know, where that might be and things like that. But you know, that's probably a project that we need to tackle after we make sure the Walnut Corridor is healthy. It's not something we can say, let's do this right now, because both projects would probably have a potential for failure because we don't have the resources to do both. I don't think in our community right now.
You're the owner of Toys Forever, and you're one of the anchors here in the Walnut Corner. If we stand out here, if we walk out here, it's raining right now, but what do you see when you look down here? Do you see progress from a few years ago? What gives you hope? What gives you concern?
I don't see progress. I hate to say that. I mean, there's always progress. There's little wins here and there. I kind of felt for the last couple of years we're in a little bit of a stagnation period. You know, when I look out here, I look at some buildings. Like I can look down at the corner at Charles and Walnut, where we used to have Casella's Kitchen, and we lost Casella's at the end of the year. But the space is leased again. I mean, so it's not empty at least. You know, it's got a photography studio in it, which my own self, I'd prefer retail spaces, and we put professional offices on the second floor, and that's historically how these buildings were designed. And so we're not utilizing them the way they were designed to be used. That's the one thing that kind of frustrates me. And then, you know, across the street, I see, just right in my quick line, I saw here two for lease signs. Yeah. In my single block. So that, you know, that is a concern to me. But you know, but I also look at them, those are opportunities there. There are two places that we could bring businesses into. We just need to put entrepreneurs or small business owners or wannabe owners together with the owners of these buildings, and then find a mutually beneficial arrangement for those two. You know, that's going to be a thing we got to figure out how to make work. The buildings look really, really pretty. The streetscape looks really nice. I mean, although there's some infrastructure things we can probably work on, you know, that are probably coming along. But in general, every day I still love to come to work down here. It's a nice place to be in Muncie, so I can't complain that much.
That is Brandon Mundell, a Ball State University graduate in entrepreneurism who owns Toys Forever Models and Hobbies, talking about Muncie's downtown redevelopment. Do you have a story about living in downtown or Muncie's future? We'd like to hear it. Send me an email or maybe even a digital recording of your story to indianaweekend@gmail.com. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman, and glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you'd like more information or have a suggestion for a future story. We need all your ideas for places we should go and people we should talk to. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.